Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 2, Crowley Golden and the Isis Heart, a tale of Egyptian revival. Written and performed for podcast by MJ Hahn. Good evening, welcome to episode 9, and thanks for tuning in. So, listeners, last time we spent a Saturday night in Colma, where the Crexansara went on a little midnight rampage looking for graveyard dust. Tina Bleiberman did her best to intervene, but sadly ended all bottled up. Then Grandpa Theo went and got himself inadvertently involved and hauled away by Danilov for questioning, but more on that later. As we fade in, it's a brand new Sunday morning, as the sun rises over Green Street. Chapter 9, Downtown with Wilshire. The first rays of the brilliant orange sunrise began to bounce around the walls of Yuki's bedroom, forcing her to pry a single eye open. Sunday morning had arrived, and as the murky thickness of sleep cleared, a thought slowly wheedled its way into Yuki's brain. In spite of waiting patiently until the wee hours of the morning, Tina Bleiberman had never reappeared as promised, and then another realization gently thumped Yuki between the eyes. Grandpa Theo hadn't called her back either. Yuki rolled over and double-checked her phone just to be sure.
Nope. No calls at all.
She yawned and then tried to convince herself that this wasn't necessarily ominous.
Oh, Tina probably just got distracted or something. And as for that crazy old wizard, ha, who knows?
Yuki rolled over again, burying her face away from the blazing dawn in the cool underside of her pillow, and promptly fell back to sleep. Hours later, Yuki awoke suddenly, fresh from a dream that had unfortunately featured Wilshire Sutton. Yuki shuddered, thinking that maybe it had actually qualified as a bona fide nightmare. Yuki quickly replayed the details in her mind before it evaporated completely. Wilshire, with her golden hair glinting in the sunshine, had been walking towards the little cafe in the center of Union Square, while in the distance, the large clock over the entrance of the Tiffany building read 11:11 a.m., It had been so vivid, it had seemed so real. Yuki realized that her heart was pounding and her veins were tingling with adrenaline, accompanied with the little twist of nausea that she hadn't felt since her days at the Curse Castle. The feeling that usually heralded an abrupt journey into the past, only this time, mercifully, Yuki remained firmly rooted in the present, which made her wonder if her dream had been only a dream.
Maybe it wasn't the past this time. Maybe it was the future.
The vision of the Tiffany & Company clock flashed through her mind again. 11:11 a.m. Yuki sat bolt upright, fumbled for her phone, and checked the time.
Ah, 10 o'clock. Gotta go.
A few moments later, as Yuki stumbled down the stairs, the doctor glanced up from her laptop with a look of surprise. Clearly, somewhat astonished that Yuki was already awake, let alone dressed and ready to go out. Apparently, the doctor had just been speaking to Mrs. Flack about the press conference, or more importantly, about the alleged Ajala Mall sighting at the Legion. Yuki nodded without thinking, and barely caught herself before she blurted out that Tina Bleiberman had already told her. Yet the doctor still looked at her askance.
Wait a minute. Who did you talk to? I thought you were still on lockdown.
Yuki tried to laugh it off while she gathered up the last of her things.
Oh, I talk to people. You'd be surprised.
Yuki zipped up her hoodie and turned for the front door. The doctor raised an eyebrow.
And where are you going? Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. It's just that you've been practically glued to that sofa.
Yuki rolled her eyes while she pulled her hood up.
I'm just going to Union Square to walk around and stuff. I won't be gone long.
On that note, Yuki disappeared down the stairs towards the front door while the doctor called after her.
Oh, okay, well, at least keep your phone on, please.
Moments later, Yuki followed her usual path down the snaking stairwells out of Telegraph Hill until she found herself crossing the boundary between North Beach and downtown. Deciding against the formidable uphill trek towards Chinatown, Yuki opted for the lonely, glassy canyon of Montgomery Street. She was greeted first by the imposing silhouette of the Pyramid Building, which loomed high above like the sentinel to downtown. Sunday traffic was still light, and the sidewalks were practically deserted. The office buildings towered overhead, definitely leaving Yuki with the feeling that she was traveling along the bottom of an immense mirrored ravine. While she walked, her mind wandered back to the issues surrounding her little supernatural support network bailing on her. Yuki was perplexed, mixed with an ever-growing feeling of unease. It's not like Grandpa Theo had been blasé about her call the night before. In fact, he had been everything but.
You just stay put and let me handle this. I'll make sure Tina doesn't get into any trouble. Let me call you back when I get a hold of her.
And once again, Yuki tried to convince herself that the fact that she hadn't heard from either GT or Tina since then didn't necessarily mean that anything sinister had happened. Although the argument seemed to be getting a little weaker each time she let herself stop to think about it. Yuki trudged along, zigzagging her way through the deserted glass chasms of downtown, from Montgomery to Kearney to Grant, and finally to Post Street. Here, the buildings didn't tower overhead quite as high, and there was more concrete than glass. Then the designer boutiques began to emerge into view, while the sidewalks suddenly showed signs of life. Yuki crossed Stockton Street, and a few steps later, she found herself in the heart of Union Square. There was a light breeze that blew through the palm trees which lined the square. Even the sun was out for a moment. The tide of tourists and shoppers was slowly rising, which was handy and allowed Yuki to walk around inconspicuously while she bided her time. Yuki took the opportunity to scan the area and familiarize herself with the enemy territory, as it were. Union Square was, naturally, lined with department stores, except on Powell Street, which housed the old St. Francis Hotel. Stately, yet slightly moldering grand lady that had been on the square since before the big quake in 1906. There was also Dewey's Monument in the center of the square, the 95-foot granite column crowned with the bronze-winged victory statue which seemed to be leaping into space. Yuki lowered her gaze and found herself returning to reality. Amid the mingling foot traffic, she found a seat in a discreet corner that afforded a clear view of the Tiffany's clock. It was 10 minutes past 11. Yuki tried to steady her nerves, while a tiny feeling of doubt began to nag at her. Suddenly, she wondered what she was doing. What did she think she was going to accomplish without having Tina there in her corner as backup?
Tina's bound to show up eventually. At least I hope so.
Then, Yuki heard the all-too-familiar giggle carry from across the square. The flash of blonde hair in the sunlight, and a slightly jarring pink-and-white ensemble that clearly stood out from the crowd. Target spotted. Wilshire Sutton.
OMG! Hey, hotness! What you doing?
Yuki watched while Wilshire scampered over to a tall, dark-haired boy. He seemed familiar to Yuki right away. Then it dawned on her. It was Scott Taylor Thompson, a junior at Veracity High. Wilshire flashed her megawatt smile and pulled Scott into an awkward hug, which nearly caused him to drop the venti to-go cup he was holding. Wilshire peeled with giggles.
Is that my coffee? Or smoking on Fat Frat, right? Oh, gee, you're so super sweet, Scotty.
Yuki tried to keep herself from gagging while she saw Scott grin and suddenly flash to a bright pink. She grumbled under her breath.
I don't believe this crap actually works for her.
Wilshire grabbed Scott by the hand and dragged him down the little stairwell in the opposite direction towards Neiman Marcus. Yuki got to her feet and trailed behind them at a discreet distance. The pair entered through the revolving door, and Yuki ducked behind a nearby flower stall. Since the entire facing wall of the store was glass, Yuki was able to watch Wilshire linger around the cosmetics counters while Scott trailed obediently behind. Somehow, Wilshire's voice managed to carry through the wall of glass. Yuki cringed accordingly.
What do you think? Do you like this one? How about this one? You boys are all the same. Okay, let's go upstairs to Marc Jacobs.
As the pair ascended up the escalator to the designer floors above, Yuki cautiously pushed her way through the revolving door and followed them up. It wasn't difficult to find Wilshire's trail. Her giggle seemed to travel across vast distances like a beacon. By the time Yuki caught up to them, Scott was shelling out a handful of cash for a hand-braided sustainable fiber slouchy belt that Wilshire just had to have. A few speedy turns around the store, and Wilshire had made quick work of Neiman Marcus and was ready to leave. Scott merely nodded his head and sputtered in agreement. Then Yuki had to duck out of sight as they headed for the escalator. Her ears pricked up as they descended.
So I'm way excited for the banquet, Scotty. It's gonna totally be, like, super fun and stuff.
Yuki thought to herself.
Didn't Grandpa Theo say something about a banquet?
Yuki snapped out of her thoughts in time to see Wilshire's blonde waves bouncing in the direction of the Louis Vuitton store across the street. She scrambled down the escalator and back out through the revolving door. Yuki suddenly found herself hiding this time on the opposite side of the flower stall. Wilshire had stopped in her tracks and was frantically texting, while Scott stood nearby looking awkward. A few moments later, Wilshire returned looking noticeably less giggly.
OMG, I totally forgot this thing I gotta do. I'm so sorry, Hotness, but I guess I gotta go.
Yuki scoffed, and then was surprised at Scott's reaction. Far from being bothered or upset, Scott seemed actually concerned. He offered a hug, and Wilshire accepted with a look of perfect sincerity. And then, from her vantage point, Yuki saw it. While Scott's face was buried in Wilshire's curls, Yuki watched Wilshire's sincerity disappear, replaced with a look of sly indifference. The mask fell instantly back into place as they broke apart, and Scott made his awkward goodbyes. Wilshire waved and smiled until Scott was out of sight. Then she turned up Stockton Street with a look that was all business. Yuki was too intrigued not to follow. This time, Wilshire led Yuki a few blocks north, where she suddenly ducked into the Starbucks on the corner. Luckily, the constant flow of pedestrians was enough to camouflage Yuki, but she didn't have to wait long.
OMG! Hey, Hotness! What you doing? Is that for me? Orange Smoke and Non-Fat Frap, right? Oh, you're so sweet. Thanks.
Yuki pulled her hood down as Wilshire suddenly emerged and started walking back down Stockton Street, this time in the company of a different boy. He was shorter, with copper-colored hair, and Yuki instantly recognized him from school as well.
What's she doing with Blake Allen Matthews?
Yuki knew Blake a little. Well, knew of him. Mostly because he was one of the more notorious math geeks at Veracity. Yuki couldn't imagine what he was doing with someone like Wilshire. This time, Wilshire disappeared into Saks Fifth Avenue and basically followed the same ritual. She stopped at the cosmetics counter, then she made a fuss about asking Blake which colors he liked better. Blake managed an opinion, which Wilshire basically ignored. Then they made a beeline for the sunglasses department, where poor old Blake laid down a stack of cash for a pair of the latest bug-eyed frames from Dior. Again, Wilshire made a quick whip around the store, forcing Yuki to jump out of sight every so often. She caught a portion of Wilshire's chatter, and somehow wasn't exactly surprised that she'd heard it already.
So, I'm like super excited for the banquet and stuff, Blakey. It's gonna totally be totally fun.
Yuki watched Blake nod his head in agreement while Wilshire beamed. Again, Yuki scoffed.
What's the deal with this banquet thing?
Yuki didn't have long to ponder, because shortly after, apparently, Wilshire had gotten her fill of Saks Fifth Avenue and had made up her mind to leave. And naturally, Blakey nodded and followed obediently. Once again, it was back out onto the sidewalk. And once again, Wilshire began a furious bout of texting while Blake waited patiently at a distance. Wilshire returned to him with the same mask of sincere disappointment.
OMG, don't hate me, Blakey. I totally forgot this thing I gotta do. I'm so sorry, Hotness, but I guess I've gotta go.
Again, Wilshire deftly handled the situation and sent Blakey on his way. And once again, as soon as Blake was out of sight, Wilshire's facade fell and she darted back across the square towards the first little cafe where this entire adventure had originally gotten underway. Yuki had just returned to her original hiding spot when Wilshire was met with yet another boy from Veracity High.
Hey, Hotness! What you doing?
Wilshire stood on her tiptoes to kiss the cheek of Veracity's star golden-haired quarterback, Nolan Oakes Noble, who was holding yet another enormous orange mocha non-fat frappuccino.
OMG, Nollykins, is that for me? Aw, you're so sweet.
For once, the meeting made sense to Yuki. Nolan was known to her all too well. Yuki had seen him around school hanging out with Wilshire all the time, and as far as she could tell, they had been the couple around campus. Well, at least until Wilshire had set her sights on Crowley. And now, apparently, several other boys as well.
She sure is busy.
Yuki emerged from her thoughts once more to see that Wilshire was now dragging Nolan back down the little stairwell towards Neiman Marcus.
What? She's going back there again?
As soon as Yuki posed the question, oddly enough in the distance, Wilshire answered her.
You're so funny. I just have to return some lame crap that I got. It'll just take a minute.
Yuki raised her eyebrows and jogged a few steps to catch up. She followed at a distance and watched Wilshire march right back up to the Marc Jacobs boutique counter, where she handed over the slouchy belt like it was the tiredest thing that she had ever seen. Wilshire then pocketed the wad of cash with a little smile and grabbed Nolan by the arm.
Come on, hotness! One more stop over at Saks. I just can't stand these stupid sunglasses. They're so over already.
Yuki wasn't surprised when Wilshire proceeded to return to the Dior counter at Saks, only to exit with another handful of cash.
OMG, I'm totally bagged. You want to get some lunch or something, Nollykins? We've got to talk about the big banquet coming up and everything. It's going to be super fun.
Nolan nodded obediently and then asked Wilshire where she felt like eating, at which point Wilshire instantly burst into giggles.
Nolly, you think super free? Duh. The Cheesecake Factory, where else?
It was here that Yuki had reached her limit. She had to draw the line at the Cheesecake Factory and figured that her day of reconnaissance had come to an end. She did feel, however, that a certain phone call that she had been putting off couldn't be delayed any longer. Yuki reached into her pocket, pulled out her phone, and dialed Crowley's number. While the call rang, Yuki's brain scrambled with the notion of what exactly she was going to say.
Hey, how you doing? So, I've been spying on Wilshire, and I thought you should know that she's going out with half the boys in school.
Well, maybe not. While Yuki waited for Crowley to pick up, she failed to notice that Wilshire had stopped and was fishing through her enormous shoulder bag with a peculiar look on her face. Yuki's voice dried up in her throat when her call was finally answered.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yuki forced herself to respond while she watched Wilshire in the distance.
Hi, is Crowley there?
There was a pause, and then she saw a frowning Wilshire step away from Nolan. For a fleeting moment, Yuki felt like she had the upper hand.
What? Who?
Crowley Golden? This is his phone, right?
Wilshire paused again, and in the silent interim, the echoing siren of a passing ambulance screamed by. Yuki saw Wilshire turn her head, and then return to her phone looking severe. Yuki realized the sound carried over the phone, producing a strange sort of distortion. Suddenly, Wilshire's voice sounded decidedly less giggly.
I'm sorry. Crowley is busy right now. And just, who is this anyway? And where are you?
Wilshire began whipping her head around, looking intently at anyone who was talking on a phone. Yuki reacted too late, and Wilshire's eyes locked on her. She heard Wilshire's hiss before she managed to hang up.
You? Oh my god! What are you doing here, you little freak?
Yuki made a run for it, dashing away as fast as she could without really noticing what direction she was running in. When she ducked around a corner out of sight, she paused a moment to take in her surroundings. She found herself standing at the entrance of the luxurious Maiden Lane. She darted past the wide-open wrought iron gate and quickly made her way through the tables and chairs of an elegant outdoor brasserie. Yuki hid in a shallow alcove next to the Chanel boutique's glaringly opulent display windows, where she stopped to catch her breath. It was then that she felt the all-too-familiar twist of nausea in the pit of her stomach. Her vision began to blur, and the quaint little luxury alleyway began to swim before her. There was a curious shimmer in the air, like sunlight reflecting off a million tiny mirrors. Yuki rubbed her eyes, and then leaned back for support against what she had thought was a concrete wall only a second ago. But now she fell backwards into empty air, and collided rather unfortunately into a large stinking trash heap. Yuki's nostrils were assaulted with the pungent smell of horse manure and rotten garbage. She stumbled to her feet, gasping, only to find herself standing between two shanty huts made of mismatched rough timbers. Yuki blinked at her new surroundings. The narrow lane was still flanked by tall buildings, only what had been concrete and glass was now dark, soot-covered brick. The elegant outdoor brasserie and all the designer boutiques were now a huddled row of strange little wooden shacks. Yuki walked out into the center of the little street and craned her neck back toward Union Square. Carriages and the clomp of hoofbeats filled the air. The towering dewy column and the winged victory statue were both noticeably absent. And then Yuki saw the hand-painted street sign, now reading Morton Street instead of Maiden Lane.
Yeah, what do you think you're doing standing there like that? You'll never make a cent dressed in them dungarees, darling.
Yuki spun around to find herself being accosted by a large, toothless woman with bright hennaed hair and a flimsy blouse that barely contained her womanly pulchritude. She gave Yuki a little shove, sending her back stumbling into the ash cans. There was a general chorus of approval as several other ladies began popping their heads around out of their little shacks to see what was the matter, and then burst into fits of laughter at the scene. Yuki felt her cheeks burning as she struggled to her feet. As soon as she had begun to worry about what to do next, the little twist of nausea returned and the air began to shimmer once more. Suddenly, Yuki found herself delivered back to the present.
There you are, you little stalker weirdo. What's your problem anyway?
Yuki couldn't help thinking that somehow the notion of Tina suddenly dropping in like a giant flaming deus ex machina seemed to be too much to hope for.
Where's Tina when you need her?
Wilshire's wild expression seemed to harden.
What's that? What are you mumbling?
Wilshire took a few steps forward and then suddenly looked horrified.
Is that garbage? So totally gross.
Yuki looked down at herself and realized that she had managed to bring a little bit of Morton Street back with her to the present. Wilshire's expression intensified, like she couldn't resist going in for the kill.
So what is all this? Like, some kind of homeless look or something? You're such a little loser. No wonder you burnt your house down. Oh, and I've seen your permanent record, you know. You're like some total antisocial basket case or something. So sad. Crowley knows it too, but he's just too polite to say anything in your face. Now I can tell him that you're like a bag lady, as well as crazy.
Shut up. Crowley's my friend.
Friend? Don't make me laugh. Is that why you two haven't spoken in like a year or something?
It's only been a few months, and it's because you hijacked his phone. I bet Crowley doesn't know about that, does he?
Wilshire smiled and took another step closer. Her blonde waves seemed to tower over Yuki, hanging down like a nest of flaxen vipers.
If he really wanted to talk to you, don't you think he would have found a way? What do you think about that, you little freak?
Yuki found that she had completely lost her voice, and even her will to put up a fight under Wilshire's seething look of disdain. Suddenly, it seemed pretty clear to Yuki that there was no way she would be able to take on Wilshire alone. And since it looked like the alley wasn't going to be erupting with violet fireballs anytime soon, Yuki could only sort of hunch her shoulders in silence while Wilshire waved her away dismissively.
Pathetic! You're not even worth my time! Just stay out of my way, you little freak!
Sloan and Crowley were slowly limping along up Masonic Avenue in the Sunday evening traffic, while the final embers of the sunset cooled over the distant horizon. A large black plastic garment bag from Tux Deluxe nearly took up the entire back seat of Sloan's new shiny silver Prius. The two had spent a busy afternoon in Corte Madera, where the exhaustive search effort for Crowley's tuxedo had taken up most of the day. Well, there had also been time for a haircut, which had proved to be one of the highlights of Sloan's day, considering how much Crowley had put up a fight. It seemed that he hadn't had a haircut in quite some time, since he had been growing out the black dye job from the previous year, and the final result had everyone surprised that Crowley's natural hair color was really sandy blonde. And then Sloan had had a full-on maternal moment when Crowley was getting fitted for his tuxedo. She couldn't help getting a little misty when she realized that Crowley had grown nearly half a foot since the last time she had bought him clothes. It was then that Sloane's moment took a severe nosedive when she got the call from Crowley's dad.
Hey, it's Morty. I'm sorry to bother you with this, but do you think you could drive Crowley home tonight? I'm stuck here at the station, and when you get to the cottage, could you get Theo to call me? He's not answering the home phone.
After that, Sloane and Crowley called it a day. They packed up the Prius and began to navigate their way through weekend traffic across the Golden Gate Bridge back into the city.
So things seemed to go pretty well with Sheridan the other night, am I right?
Crowley sort of chuckled to himself.
Yeah, okay, she's cool, all right? Your new girlfriend is cool, Mom. I was actually surprised at how much we had to talk about.
Sloane smiled.
Ah, I knew you two would hit it off.
Crowley had to admit it. Despite a little awkwardness early on, Sloane's new friend, Sheridan, was pretty cool. What with nearly rivaling Crowley's knowledge of 80s music trivia, he had actually found himself engaged with several lively discussions about the British post-punk era. From all of the guitarists in the Banshees, to how Ultravox had pretty much sucked after John Fox had left the group. Yep, Sheridan was pretty cool. Not to mention her vague likeness to Joan Jett, which complemented his mother's Billy Idolness rather nicely. When mother and son had finally made their way to Ashbury Terrace, they pulled up to find Morty standing at the curb in front of the cottage waiting for them. He was wearing a pained look on his face. Sloane shut off the car and mumbled under her breath.
I don't like the look of this.
They both stepped out, and Morty rushed over, looking concerned.
Good, you're home. I've been trying to call you.
He looked over at Crowley.
And why is it when I call you, I get Wilshire? I thought you gave me your new number.
Crowley sputtered, looking confused.
I did give you my new number. Wait, didn't I?
Morty began to tremble with frustration while Sloane intervened.
Okay, let's all take a deep breath. I can't believe I'm the calm one for a change. Now, what's going on, Morty? What's the matter?
Morty took a deep breath and steadied himself.
Look, I got in late last night. I didn't see Dad. I thought he'd just gone to bed. Same thing this morning. I just thought he was out. Then I get worried, so I come back home because I hadn't heard from him all day. I thought maybe he had fallen or something.
Yeah? So what's wrong with
him? Well, that's just it. He's not here. And his workshop's all busted up. It looks like someone broke in, all right. Don't worry, I've already called the department.
While Sloane and Crowley both gaped simultaneously, Crowley's phone took the inopportune moment to suddenly ring. Morty scowled.
Well, good thing somebody has your phone number.
Crowley rolled his eyes and checked the caller ID. Not that he really needed to. Only one person seemed to be calling him these days.
Hello, Wilshire?
Hey, hotness. What you doing? I've been totally thinking about you all day. I'm so super excited about the banquet. Did you get your tux? OMG!
And so, Chapter 9 comes to a close. Special thanks go to guest voices on this episode, Sally Clausen as the Doctor, Leanne Parker as Yuki, and Tristy Taylor as Wilshire Sutton. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and incomtech.com. I'd also like to thank Random Coil UK for their cover of Satie's Nacien No. 1. For more information, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 10. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.